Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvochim Daf Lamed Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The shiur today will begin at the beginning of the third perek, which is found at the bottom of daf lamed aleph omid beis in Zvochim. The Mishnah. Before we begin the Mishnah, we have a topic heading that we've assigned to the sugya. You will find in our marked Gemaras, as they appear on your screen, a title assigned to each new sugya under the heading Nosei, which translates as topic. In this case, we've written Dinei Psulei Avoda, the halachos, the laws regarding those that are unfit for service in the Beis HaMikdash. Sheshachtu, if they slaughtered, or shekiblu as adam, or they received the dam. They received the blood. The Mishnah. Kol hapsulim sheshachtu, shchitosim kshera. All those that are deemed unfit for service in the korban procedure, that may be true with the exception of shchita. They are acceptable to function as the slaughterers. Shashchita kshera, and now we have a list of those that are unfit for the rest of the korban procedure. They include bezorim, those that are non-kohanim, ubenoshim, women, ubaavodim, slaves, ubetmeim, and people that are not pure, that are have experienced ritual impurity. Vafilu bekotshe kotshim. They are able to shecht even for those types of sacrifices that are deemed of the high holy nature, kotshe kotshim, ubevat shaloyu temeim noigim babosar, with the provision that those that are tome do not touch the meat of the korban of the sacrifice. Lefikoch, as a result of their being acceptable for the stage of processing known as shchita, hein poislim b'machshava, these individuals that otherwise are not fit to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, but since they are fit to serve as slaughterers, as shochtim of korbanos, if they have an improper thought during the shechita process, it will take hold, it will be binding. The kulan, all of these psulim, these unfit individuals, shekiblu es adam, chutz lizmano v'chutz lemkomo, if they received the dam, now they're not supposed to serve in that capacity as receivers of dam, but if they did, and they did it with an improper thought, namely a thought that deals with lapse of time or wrong, incorrect place, which would include the kabbalah sadam, the receipt of the dam with the intention of eating the meat or offering on the altar those items that are offered after the time allotted lapses, or they intend to eat or maktir or offer outside of the expected place. In the case of kotshe kalim, that would be outside, to eat outside of Yerushalayim. In the case of offering things, that would be offering on an altar that's outside of the Azora. So, im yesh dam hanefesh, if you have a situation that the psulim were mekabel the dam, and they were mekabel the dam, as we mentioned, they were mekabel the dam with an incorrect machshava, chutz lizmano, chutz lemkomo. So the Mishnah says, im yesh dam hanefesh, if there is still lifeblood in the animal, yachzor hakosher v'yakabel, an appropriate one, if there's a proper kohen around, he can do the kabbalah. We'll say the Kabbalah again. And the point being here is that the machshava of those, the incorrect mind thoughts of those that are posel, does not take effect. Hence, hence the korban is not ruined with their having done Kabbalah with an incorrect mindset. And therefore, there is a tikkun, a repair that's possible in the case that there is still lifeblood in the animal available for kabbalah on the part of a kosher individual. Kibel ha-kosher v'nosan l'posel, yachzir l'kosher. If the kabbalah was done by a kosher, by an appropriate individual, and he gave the dam over to someone who is improper, unacceptable, unqualified, so it's the dam is to be returned to the kosher individual. Kibel b'yamino v'nosan l'smoilo, if he did kabbalah in his right hand, which is the correct thing to do, and then he transferred it to his left hand, he transferred the blood in the vessel to his left hand, yachzir l'yamino, he should put it back in his right hand. Kibel b'kli kodesh v'nosan l'kli chol, yachzir l'kli kodesh. If he was mekabel adam properly and then poured it into a mundane vessel, a non-sanctified vessel, he should pour it back into a holy vessel. Nishbach min ha-kli al ha-ritzpo v'osvoi, kosher. If the blood, after it being received in a vessel, then spilled on the floor, it can be gathered up. This is as opposed to something we've learned earlier in the Masechta, where the dam spills directly from the neck of the animal onto the floor. That is not subject to being gathered up. Nosnoi agabi hakevesh shaloi keneged hayesoid. If the dam was sprinkled on the ramp leading up to the mizbeach, or on the altar itself, but over a point of the mizbeach that there is no outer frame known as the yesod, or base of the mizbech. The base of the mizbech ran around most of the borders, most of the circumference of the mizbech, with the exception of the southeast corner. So if he did a blood application to the altar at the over a point on the altar over the southeast corner, that would be inappropriate. Nosan es hanitnin lamato lamalo ves hanitnin lamalo lamato. If the dam was applied to the inappropriate location, im yesh dam hanefesh, if there is still lifeblood in the animal, yachzur hakosher v'yakabel. So once again, these situations lend themselves to tikkun, to repair, by in the event that there's a balance of lifeblood still in the animal available to be received and processed properly. The Gemara opens up with a diuk on the lashon of the Mishnah. The Mishnah mentioned regarding the unqualified individuals who did the shechita, it uses the term sheshachtu, which is a past tense expression meaning post facto. Namely, if the psulim did the shechita, then we'll accept it. Giving us the feeling that it's not appropriate to give the shechita, to assign the shechita to any of these individuals at the outset. So that will give rise to a question. The Gemara will show that they are able, that the psulim, as they're called in the Mishnah, are able to do shechita even at the outset, not just di'evet as in a post facto sense. The Gemara, shochto di'evet in... Shachtu is the word found in the Mishnah, which implies only if they did it. And post facto, we have to rule on the korban, so we'll say it's passable, it's okay. However, lichatchila lo, but to turn to them at the outset and ask a posel to do the shechita, that, according to the Mishnah, would seem to be incorrect, would not be appropriate to do. Viraminu, and to this we raise a contradiction, a stira, from a source. We have a long question marking assigned to this section of the Gemara. As you can see, you have a kuf to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, kushya, with a vertical dashed line indicating that all of the lines of Gemara opposite this long vertical dashed line form the question. Before we read on in the Gemara, let's just glance at our topic heading, the nosei. We have at the side, liyashev. Our job here is to resolve hamakoros, the sources, beinyan posel sheshachat, regarding the generally unqualified individual who did the shechita. Is it lechatchila or just bedieved? So the Gemara now raises a question from a source, v'raminu, v'shochat, shechita bezar kshera. From the Pasuk, we learn that the Shechita by a non-Kohen is okay. Shashchita k'shera b'zorim u'benoshim u'bavodim u'vetmeim v'afilu b'kotshe kotshim. These are all things we saw in the Mishnah. O'enu ela b'kohanim, or maybe Shechita is kosher only if done by a Kohen, and not zorim noshim avodim or tmeim. Amris, so the response is v'chi me'ayin bosa. Rashi says, "V'chi ma'ayin bosa lomar shetzricha kuna, v'alo lo nemar ba kohen." The source itself is asking, "How is it that you should suggest that maybe only a kohen do it? Where in the Torah is there even a hint to it that a kohen would be expected to do the shechita?" So the Brisa answers, "Michlal shenemar, from the fact that it says, "V'ato v'necho yitcho tishmu es kunaschem l'chol devar ha-mizbeach." The Pasuk addresses the Kohanim and says that the Kohanim will be in charge of all matters relating to the altar. Yochol af b'shchita. Maybe that includes the slaughtering of sacrifices as well. So there is grounds for thinking that maybe slaughtering too is limited to the Kohanim. Talmud lomar v'shochad es ben habokor lefnei Hashem v'krivu b'nei Aaron ha-Kohanim. The word vihikrivu is understood in this context to refer to the kabbalah sadam, the receipt of the blood. Mikabbalah vi'elech, from the point of receipt of the dam onwards, which is something after the shechita, from only that point, from the point of kabbalah onwards, mitzvahs kahuna, there kohanim are expected to do the service. Limeid al hashechita, this teaches us concerning the shechita which precedes the kabbalah, shekshera b'chol adam, that it's fine, it's okay, it's totally acceptable if done by anybody. This is the end of our questions. We see from here that the idea of a non-Kohen doing the Shechita is fine at the outset. So why does our Mishnah indicate that it's only good b'di'evet? The Gemara answers, Hu hadin dafilu l'chadchilo nami. As far as our Mishnah is concerned as well, it's okay at the outset to have a non-Kohen do the Shechita. Then why does the Mishnah use the expression of a past tense nature indicating only post facto, if he did it, it's okay, we'll overlook it, so to speak? Umishum dekaboy lemisna tameim. Since the Mishnah wants to include in the list of those that are considered psulim, unqualified in general, it wants to include in the list people that are tomei, when it comes to Tameim, we prefer that they don't do the Shechita even at the outset. If we skip this for a moment, the brackets. Tana Sheshachtu. That's why the Tana chose the word Sheshachtu, because of the presence of Tameim in the list of Psulim. Let's go over the Gemara. We skipped a bracketed section, simply to make the reading a little smoother. We read the Gemara again from the line above, Umishum de Kaboi lemisna tameim, and since the Mishnah wanted to use the add as an example in the list of psulim those that are ritually unclean, the lechadchila lo, those people, as opposed to the zorim or the noshim, the tameim, we prefer that at the outset they don't do the shechita, gzeira shema yigav basar, because of a fear that they may touch the flesh of the sacrifice, and they would ruin the korban that there by touching it. Tana sheshachtu. Therefore, the Tana chose the b'di'evet expression sheshachtu. But after all said and done, the term sheshachtu is not the most appropriate term when dealing with the other examples in the Mishnah, namely zorim, noshim, and avodim. The Gemara asks, "V'tomei di'evet shapir domi," and a tomei is okay at all? We're going to raise a question showing us that a tomei is not acceptable whatsoever for shechita. V'rominu, we raise a question. The Brisa opens up with a quote from Psukim. The Pasuk that is cited is from Vayikra Gimel Pasuk Beis, On the side of our Gemara, we've included this Gemara. So if you see where it's noted, Vayikra Gimel Pasuk Beis, first we read the Pasuk. It says, V'somach yodai al roish korbanoi, u'shechotoi pesach oil moed. In this Pasuk, you have a reference to smicha, the placing of the hands on the head of the animal before it's shechted, and a reference to shechita, to its slaughtering. So the Brisa says, V'somach v'shochat. Ma smicha b'tohorim, just like smicha is done by those that are tohor, that are pure. There is an assumption made that that's an obvious point. Hence, the Brisa uses that as a jumping off point. So just like smicha is done obviously by those that are tohor, af shchita b'tohorim, so to shchita must be done by those that are tohor. So how can it be suggested? How can the Mishnah say that a Tomei is okay for Shechita, albeit not L'chadchila, but it is okay b'dieved, when we have this source indicating that the Shochet must be Tohar and not Tomei? The Gemara answers, what we just learned in this source is Midorabonan, that we would like Tohorim to do it is a rabbinic expectation, because otherwise, if he's Tomei, he may touch the flesh like we learned above. The Gemara asks, Maishno smicha, what is different about smicha? That it's so clear to the author of this source that he must be tohor midoraisa dichtiv lifnei Hashem, because the Pasuk speaks about smicha being done lifnei Hashem. Well, shchita nami Hoksiv lifnei Hashem. There's a Rashi that starts at the very bottom of this Omid and continues at the top of Omid Beis, which explains that this idea that it says lifnei Hashem by smicha is not something that you actually see in the psukim, but the Pasuk says, there's a Pasuk that says, V'shochad es ben ha-bokor lefnei Hashem. This is a Pasuk that we did not include on the side of our Gemara on Omid Aleph, but there is such a Pasuk, V'shochad es ben ha-bokor lefnei Hashem, and there's an idea that tekef l'smicha shchita, that shchita takes place immediately after the smicha is done. Therefore, smicha is something that cannot be done outside the Azorah. Shchita, the Pasuk itself says, must be done lifnei Hashem. So if the smicha must be immediately before the shchita, and the shchita must be lifnei Hashem, it is obvious that the smicha is also lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem indicating in the Azorah. And a tomei cannot enter the Azorah. So at this point, the Gemara is asking, how can you tell me that the idea of requiring tahorim is only a darabonan? The idea of requiring tahorim for shchita should be a doraisa. Just like you find by smicha, you see that you have to have lifnei Hashem, which in fact is derived from the halach of shchita. So shchita nami hoksiv lifnei Hashem. In the case of shchita, we cited from Rashi that it says clearly it has to be lifnei Hashem, and lifnei Hashem indicates in the Azorah. And if that be the case, so a tomei would be unacceptable. Tomei is not allowed to enter the Azorah, so he's not acceptable on a Torah level. The Gemara answers, this idea that shechita must be done lifnei Hashem, in fact, the shechita can take place lifnei Hashem, and a tomei individual can accomplish it. And you'll ask, but a tomei person cannot be in the Azorah. The Gemara explains right now, Efshur, the Ovid, Sakin Aruka Vishochit. You can have a tomei person holding a very long knife, standing outside the Azorah, outside the temple courtyard, with this long knife, and shechting the animal that is Lifnei Hashem. So we have a scenario where a Tomei person could, min HaTorah, carry out the Shechita. The Gemara asks, well, if that be the case, then Smicha Nami, Efshur Dima'il Yodei V'Somich. Well, then the same thing could be said about Smicha, that he could stand in the entranceway to the Azara, but not in the Azara itself, and extend his hands into the Azara and place his hands on the animal that's standing in the courtyard. The Gemara says that is not the case. That won't be allowed. Kosovar bia b'miktsas shmo bia, because we are of the opinion, according to this source, according to this point in the Gemara, this comment is not something that is accepted across the boards by everyone. But as far as this particular discussion is concerned, the recognition that there is a requirement to have smicha lifnei Hashem requires the somech to be tohar. And if you'll ask, well, it can be accomplished by a tome person, just like we described the shechita being accomplished by a tome person. In the case of smicha, that's not true, because if it would involve the tome person sticking his hands into the azora, the courtyard, that would be called partial entrance. And this source is of the opinion that a partial entrance is not acceptable. Bia b'miktsas shmo bia. Partial entrance is considered entrance. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to see a repeat of the source we just read, labeled Roman numeral number 1. Now we're going to see it presented as Roman numeral number 2. However, it will be taught in an opposite fashion, as will become apparent very shortly. Rav Chisda Masni Ipcha. He teaches this source in an opposite fashion. V'somach v'shochat, the same opening as source number 1 you can see. However, note the difference. Ma shchita b'torim, just like shchita must be done by tohorim. Af smicha b'tohorim, so too the placing of the hands must be done by tohorim. The Gemara asks, why is it that according to this source, the din of smicha being b'tahorim is learned by the fact that it's compared to shechita? Could it not be learned by the fact that lifnei Hashem is stated in conjunction with smicha, just like lifnei Hashem is stated in conjunction with shechita? Mai shna shechita dichtiv lifnei Hashem. What's different about shechita that it seems that according to this Tana, that shechita is obviously done b'tahorim, and that the Tana has to discover what's the story with regard to smicha, and he does it by comparing smicha to shechita? Why go about things that way? What's unique, what's different about shechita in that it appears to be so obvious that it requires Torah? It says, Dichtiv lifnei Hashem. Smicha nami ksiv lifnei Hashem. With regard to smicha, there is also the understanding that it's lifnei Hashem. So the question appears, even though there's no Rashi that comments on this particular piece of Gemara, the question appears that from the tone or from the style of the source, smicha was not as clear as the din of shechita, and I simply derived the din of smicha by comparing it to the din of shechita, when in fact, if shechita is so clearly b'tahorim because it says lifnei Hashem, by the same token, by smicha also, you have this idea of lifnei Hashem. The Gemara answers, if I were to rely simply on the lifnei Hashem element by smicha, I would not know that it needs to be done by tahorim. Efshir d'ma'ayil yodeh v'somich. You could actually have a tome person doing the smicha by his standing in the entranceway to the azora and sticking his hands into the azora and placing his hands on the animal. It would seem from this version of the Gemara, noting, of course, this was presented as a second version of the previous discussion. Hence, according to this version of the Gemara, the idea of bia b'miksa shmo bia doesn't seem to be a problem. In other words, partial entrance of a tomei does not constitute full entrance. And therefore, if I didn't have what the Braisa teaches, that smicha must be done by tahorim, by the fact that it's compared to shechita, but rather relying on this lifnei Hashem point, then I wouldn't know that smicha has to be done by tahorim. It could actually be done by a tomei, by his extending his hands into the azora. The Gemara asks, well, if you're going to give license to a tomei through this technique of extending hands into the azora, shechita nami, I could argue that shechita as well could actually be done by a tomei, efshir de ovid sakin aruka v'shochit. He could prepare a long knife and shecht the animal, slaughter the animal who is lifnei Hashem, but the shochet is not lifnei Hashem, and the shochet could be tomei. So we're calling into question if this idea of efshir d'mayo yodeh v'somech is a realistic suggestion and would thereby give license to the tomei doing it. In other words, I would have a fulfillment of lifnei Hashem because the animal is in the azora while the smicha is taking place, and the smicha could be done by a tomei. I could actually have the same setup by shechita. True, the pasuk says lifnei Hashem by shechita, but that doesn't teach me that the shochet has to be tahor. He could be tomei and have a long knife and shecht the animal and slaughter the animal, which is lifnei Hashem in the azora. So how do you know to say that even shechita must be done by tahorim, where according to the source it seemed to be obvious to the Tana of this source that shechita must be done by tahorim? Why so? The Gemara answers that this Tana, Ha'amani Shimon HaTimni, he, the author of this source that we read, the Roman numeral number 2 source, that took it for granted that the shechet must be tahor, is taught, this source is taught by Shimon HaTimni, and according to him, the long knife approach would be insufficient. And that's because he requires not only the animal being lifnei Hashem, he requires the shochet being lifnei Hashem. This is what will be revealed in the following source, Desanyo. V'shochat es ben habokor lifnei Hashem. V'lo ha-shochet lifnei Hashem. According to the first opinion, the pasuk is emphasizing that the animal must be in the azora, namely lifnei Hashem, but the slaughterer does not need to be there. Once again, a reference to a long knife approach. However, Shimon HaTimni Omer, and this is the opinion that we need to focus, that we focus on, Minayin Shiu Yodav Shel Shochet Lifnim Min HaNishchat. From where do you know that the arms of the Shochet must be positioned further in the Azora, further in than the animal itself? Talmud Omer, V'shochat Es ben habokor lifnei Hashem. And he understands the pasuk to mean shochet es ben habokor, the one who's slaughtering the animal, yehei lifnei Hashem. He, the slaughterer, has to be in the azora. The slaughterer, of course, as well as the animal. At this point in the Gemara, we notice a new marking. We see a house marking with a firebox, the firebox being around Reish Lakish, and fireboxes are used in our markings rather infrequently because they highlight those shitos, those opinions, or sometimes expressions that preoccupy the Gemara for a long period of time. In this case, Reish Lakish will be the subject of the Gemara's discussions all the way till Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. We also have a house marking, which in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara is labeled Roman numeral number 1, with an indicator that Roman numeral number 2 will be found on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, quite a way off from here. Before we start the sugi itself, as we already can see, it's a rather long Gemara. Let's take advantage of some of our notes on the side, topic headings and structural notes. The first note we want to take note of is the Roman numerals 1 and 2 in the house form. The house will be in around Ula over here, and if you have the ability to skip over to Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, you'll notice at the upper part of the page, the second line from the top, we've noted in a house form Rebbe Avo. In our note on the side, under our Mivneh heading, we have Roman numeral 1 and 2 in houses, Beis Deois Bedivrei Reish Lakish. We're presenting this as two opinions in attempting to present or explain Reish Lakish. Lefi Ula, Reish Lakish Doresh HaPosuk B'chol Kodesh V'chulei. The Gemara will feature a posuk B'chol Kodesh Lo Siga Ve'el HaMikdash Lo Yisavoy. That posuk, according to Ula, Reish Lakish uses in the context of Le'inyon Bia B'miktsas, regarding an issue we were just dealing with, partial entrance to the Azara. How to look at, how to categorize partial entrance. Lefi Rabbi Avo, on Daf Lama Gimel Beis, Reish Lakish Eino Doresh HaPosuk Le'inyon Bia B'miktsas. Rabbi Avo will tell us that Reish Lakish does not use this pasuk for the issue of Bia B'miktsas. What he does use it for will be revealed on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. We won't get involved with that right now. That can be treated as a separate topic. But suffice it to say that there are two major approaches to how to look at Reish Lakish. According to Ula, Reish Lakish uses the pasuk of B'chol Kodesh Lisiga with regard to partial entrance to the Azara. And the other school of thought, beginning with Rabbi Avo, which is actually, in all truthfulness, the Gemara on Daf Lamed Gimel Beis will present quite an elaborate approach to how Reish Lakish learns the pasuk of B'chol Kodesh Lo Siga. Therefore, we're taking the diplomatic approach at this point by simply saying that there's the Ula approach, which it uses B'chol Kodesh Lo Siga according to Reish Lakish for partial entrance, and there's the other approach, which we're labeling Roman numeral number 2, which says that Reish Lakish darshins the pasuk of B'chol Kodesh Lo Siga for something other than partial entrance to the Azara. What does he use it for? That, in fact, will be the subject of a lengthy discussion on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, which continues to Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph. We have a Nosei heading, in addition, titled, we see the on the side of our Gemara, we see Tomei Shehichnis Yodov Lazora. A Tomei individual who sticks his hands into the Azara, Hainu Bio B'miktsas. That is labeled, that's called partial entrance. Another topic that will be under discussion here is a Mitzora, Shechal Shmini Shalaber of Pesach. Mitzora is a person who experienced a certain skin whitenings, which cause him to be labeled a Tomei. And he is now on the 14th of Nisan, the day that the Korban Pesach is offered. The Mitzora Shechal Shmini Shelo is a reference to the Mitzora who had been Tomei. After he receives a ruling that his skin blemish has decreased or has vanished, he has a 7-day period of waiting, called Shiva Yimei Tara, and on the 8th day he has to bring a korban, a sacrifice, the sacrifices of a mitzora, after which he then becomes mutter in kodshim. He can then partake of sacrifices or eat of sacrificial meat. That is termed the mitzora b'shmini shelo. In the case the Gemara will feature, we'll be describing a mitzora on that 8th day, part of the ritual for the mitzora achieving his full purity, his full tahara, involves his standing in the entranceway of the Azora, of the courtyard, not entering it actually, but standing in the entranceway, and extending his arms into the courtyard, during which the blood of the Osham Mitzora, the Osham sacrifice for the Mitzora, the blood is applied to his thumbs, and also oil is applied. Of course, we don't have to get into the whole Tara process of the Mitzora, but suffice it to say that he has to extend his hands into the Azora before he achieves his full level of Tara. This Mitzora, on the eighth day, happens to be, in the case featured in the Gemara, we're going to be focusing on a case of Mitzora of Shechal Shemini Shlo on the 14th of Nisan. That's the day that people bring their Korban Pesach. It should be noted, parenthetically, that one who does not bring a Korban Pesach involves himself with a Chiyuv Koreis, a penalty of Koreis. In our Gemara, as our note goes on to say, V'ro'o keri boi bayom, v'toval. This Mitzora had a male emission, which is called keri. That emission, that bodily emission, causes a one-day tumah to set upon him. However, this individual had a chance to go to the mikveh. Generally speaking, outside of this sugya, we know that a person who becomes a Baal Keri, he is tumah for that day. Before sundown, he immerses in a mikveh. Namely, during daylight hours, he immerses in a mikveh, and then when sunset comes, he is considered tohar. He himself has no need to bring korbanos, but after sundown, he then can partake of holy items like truma, etc. Truma, the tithe given to kohanim. It also ought to be noted that a Baal Keri, before he immerses in the mikveh, is a high level of tumah, and he is required to be sent out not only of the Azora itself. He's not allowed in the Azora, but he's not allowed on the Temple Mount either, on Har HaBayis. He's sent out of what's called Shnei Machanos. However, after the Baal Keri immerses himself in a mikveh, he then takes on the category of a Tvul Yom. A Tvul Yom is a person who had been tameh, immersed himself in the mikveh, and is simply waiting for sunset. So we're going to describe a Mitzora, Shechal Shemini Shelo, B'Yudalid Nisan, who happened to, that very same day, this Yudalid Nisan, he became a Baal Keri and went to the mikveh. The Baal Keri who goes to a mikveh, in general, is called a Tvul Yom. So our note goes on to say, Afapi distam tvul yom osur bahar habayis, even though a standard tvul yom is forbidden to be on the Temple Mount, ze nichnas, this character, the Baal Keri, the tvul yom Baal Keri, who happened to be a Mitzora, Shechal, Shemini Shelo, B'Yudal Nisan, will be allowed to go onto the Temple Mount and go to the entranceway of the Azora, extend his hands into the Azora, and receive the Tara achieved by the Dam of the Osha Mitzora being applied to the thumbs of this client. All of that we said by way of introduction. Let us now turn to the Gemara. Bearing in mind, once again, that with our Gemara markings, Gemaras, and our recorded Shiurim, we're trying to give everyone a sense of overview of the broad picture of the Gemara structure, and we try to accomplish that by pointing out that Ula, Amar Reish Lakish, who opens up this sukya, is represented by Roman numeral number 1, when on Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, there will be a whole different approach, an entirely new approach to Reish Lakish and his use of the pasuk that will be featured momentarily. So now, continuing in the Gemara, Omar Ula, Omar Reish Lakish, Tomei Shehichnis Yodoi Lifnim Loike, a Tomei individual who stood at the entrance of the Azara and stuck his hands into the Azara? Loke. The word loke is often translated as lashings. It may be pointed out that in this case, loke means not only, we're not focusing only on lashings, but the approach here is that he is chayav as if he entered the Beis HaMikdash. And we speak about the prohibition of a tomei in the Beis HaMikdash resulting in kores. This is true only with regard to entrance to the Azora. There are also prohibitions of different types of tomeim from entering the Har HaBayis, but entrance to Har HaBayis in and of itself does not incur a kores penalty. Entrance to the Azora does generate a kores penalty. Ula Amrei Shlokish says that a tomei who stuck his hands into the Azora is loke, is punished. Shenemar b'chol kodesh lo siga v'el hamikdash lo yisovoy makish bia l'negia. The pasuk compares entrance to touching. Ma negia b'miktsas shma negia, just like partial touching when a, let us say, a tomei touches a piece of meat. He will impart tuma to the meat, even though he doesn't handle the entire piece of meat. He merely touches a part of the meat. That's negio b'miktsas. A partial touching is called touching. Af bio b'miktsas shma bio. So to partial entrance is considered entrance in the full sense of the matter. Esve Rav Hoshaya le'ula. Notice we have a long question upon us, and that's illustrated by the kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line, which indicates in our marking system that all of the lines of Gemara that are opposite this vertical dashed line are here to form the question. At the end of this discussion, we are supposed to see that Bia B'miktsas is not considered entrance. Eisvei Rav Hoshaya le'ula. Rav Hoshaya raises an objection to Ula from the following Tanaic source. Mitzora shechal shmini shaloi liyois be'erev ha-pesach. The Mitzora, whose eighth day, the day on which he brings his korbonos, including the Osham Mitzora with the accompanied blood application to thumbs, the case illustrated here in this source is one of a Mitzora whose eighth day happens to come out on Erev Pesach, the 14th of Nisan, the day that the Klal Yisrael, that the Jewish people bring their Korban Pesach. V'ro keri boi bayoim v'toval. And on that very same day, the 14th of Nisan, this fellow, who had been a Mitzora, and it's his eighth day, he also had this male emission and immersed himself in a mikveh. Omru chachomim. Even though a tvul yom in general is not allowed on the Har HaBayis, ze nichnas. This tvul yom that we just described, the mitzora shechashmi shelo, berav Pesach, and had a keri sighting, he does go onto the Har HaBayis. His purpose, of course, in going to Har HaBayis is to eventually get to the entranceway of the Azora and experience the Tahara, the purification process that the Mitzora requires. Why is all of this happening? This is happening so that this individual will be able to do his Korban Pesach. Mutov Yavoi Asei Shiesh Bo Kores. Better that the Asay, the positive commandment known as bringing a Korban Pesach, should come and push off Yidche Asay She'en Boi Kores, and push off the positive commandment dictating the sending away of the Temeim from Har HaBayis. That's also a command that we are that is a mitzvah Asay, send away the Temeim from Har HaBayis. Tomei on Har HaBayis, though, does not incur Kores. An individual who does not perform the Korban Pesach does incur a kores penalty. So we are making a special allowance for this Tevul Yom entering the Har HaBayis in order that he should be able to accomplish his Korban Pesach. When we say this Tevul Yom, we're talking about specifically the case of the Tevul Yom who happened to be a Mitzora Shechal Shmini Shalo B'Erev HaPesach. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Dvar Torah Afilu Ase Ein Bo. Rabbi Yochanan adds that on a Torah level, there isn't even a mitzvah ase regarding a Tevul Yom. The perception had been before we got to Rabbi Yochanan that a Tevul Yom of a Zav is considered like a Zav Mamish. That he, even though he immersed himself in the mikveh, he has the status of one who did not yet immerse himself. Rabbi Yochanan points out that on a Torah level, that is not true. Namely, that a Tevul Yom of a Zav is not considered like a Zav. And therefore, on a Torah level, there is no expectation of his being sent away from the Har HaBayis. And how do I know that this idea of a Tevul Yom on Har HaBayis is not a Torah level prohibition? Shenemar Vayamo Yoishofet Bekal Yehuda Fiushalayim Beveis Hashem Lefnei Hechotzer HaChadosha. The king Yehoshaphat was standing in the assembly of people in the Beis HaMikdash, and it says Lefnei Hechotzer HaChadosha. We want to focus on that expression. My Chotzer HaChadosha. What is the reference made to the new courtyard? There wasn't a new courtyard. The Beis HaMikdash had already been standing for hundreds of years. Omar Rabbi Yochanan Shechitshu Bo Dvorim. The term Chotzer HaChadosha is not a reference to the physical courtyard, but rather HaChadosha is a reference to new halachas that were established at that point. The Amru, they said in the time of Yehoshaphat, which is hundreds of years after the giving of the Torah, they said Tevul Yom Al Yikones Lemachne Leviyah. It was at that point in history that they instituted this restriction that a Tevul Yom should not enter the Levite camp. The Levite camp is, for our purposes, Har HaBayis. Machne Leviyah is a term that's associated with the Jews traveling in the Midbar. The breakdown of the Jewish camp in the Midbar was into three different camps, each one assigned a different level of holiness. That idea was transposed to the Beis HaMikdash and Yerushalayim. So the equal of Machne Leviyah in Yerushalayim is the Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount. So the halacha that a Tevul Yom is not allowed to enter the Temple Mount, that was established much later. It's not a Torah level law. V'i amris bia b'miktsas shmo bia. If you're going to say that the extension of arms into the Azora is considered like Ula Amrei Shlokish said, where we dashed underlined the expression above, that it is considered a full-fledged entrance, and it's as if he entered the Azora. It's as if this Tevul Yom entered the Azora. Hechi Mael Yodei Libahonos. How can he, the Tevul Yom of the Keri, stick his hands in the Azora for the Osham blood application on the thumbs? The Bahonos is the ritual of purification for the Mitzora that we explained earlier. How can we allow this? Edi v'edi ase sheyesh bo koresu. Both the Pesach, which we're striving to accomplish, but the Tevul Yom also issue. The Tevul Yom, the Azora, is also an ase sheyesh bo kores. As we mentioned earlier, kores is a penalty that is incurred by a Tamei who enters the Azora. And if you're going to tell me that partial entrance is considered full-fledged entrance, how can we possibly make an allowance for the Tevul Yom Keri to stick his hands in to the Azora for getting the Tara of the Mitzora? So this was a Rav Hoshaya's question to Lev. The fact remains that we have a Tanaic source that says he is allowed to do it. The only way to explain it right now would be that Bia B'miksas is lo shmo Bia, that the partial entrance is not considered entrance. Hence, when he sticks his hands in, when the Tvuyom sticks his hands in, he isn't violating a Torah precept, and therefore, since we're interested in his participating in the Korban Pesach, we make an allowance. Omar Lei, Ula responds to Rav Hoshaya and says, Matuncha, from Matuncha literally is your package or your burden. Rashi explains that from the very source that you're attempting to ask on me, I will answer you. In general, partial entrance, Bia B'miksas Shmo Bia, partial entrance is considered entrance. But the case involving the Metzorah is different. Shiny Metzorah, the case of the Tvuyom of Keri, who happened to have been a Metzorah, is different. Hoyol the Huter Litzor also, Huter Likirio. Since there's a Torah allowance for the Metzorah on his eighth day to stick his hands in, that's something that we can't argue about, that the Torah tells him to do. So, since the Torah has an allowance of Bia B'miktsas for the Metzorah on his eighth day, the issue of the Tvuyom of Keri sort of piggybacks it, rides along. Chutur L'Kirio, since there's an allowance for the Metzorah, this Metzorah fellow who happened to be a Baal Keri will make an allowance for his Keri as well. But that's only because he happened to be a Metzorah, and as such, the Torah ordains his partial entrance. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's take a look at the topic heading we have accompanying this piece of Gemara. We've entitled it Nosei Hemshech, a continuation of the topic we started till now. The note says, Lefi Ula, according to Ula, Afalpi de Bia B'miksas, Kegon Achnosos Yodayim Lazora, Shmei Bia, even though partial entrance is considered entrance, Mitzora Hanal, the Mitzora that we described above, Tehoyogam Tvuyom, Shel Keri, Machnis Yodav, he is allowed to stick his hands in. Hoyo de Huter Litzor Osoi, Huter Likirio. Since he has a Torah allowance because of its saras, his keri takes, you know, rides along that, so to speak, and is mutter, his partial entrance as a Baal Keri, Tvuyom Baal Keri, is allowed. Al smach din shel Ula, based on the din of Ula, Rav Yosef roitze lahokish elov matzav shel ruban zovin v'nasu tmei mesim. Rav Yosef wants to transpose or compare to Ula's halacha another scenario, a totally different scenario, but Rav Yosef wants to make a comparison and compare the matzav, the situation of where, once again, we are talking about the 14th of Nisan, the time of the processing of Korban Pesach. And before we continue reading our note, we must issue a word of introduction. The Korban Pesach is a unique Korban in the sense that if Rov Am Yisrael, the majority of Klal Yisrael, are Tomei Meis, we're emphasizing the situation of Tomei Meis. This is Tumah incurred as a result of exposure to the dead, to a dead Jew. Tumas Meis, or let's just say to a dead body, without getting into details. We're leaving it as a category of known as Tumas Meis. If the majority of Klal Yisrael are Tumei Meis, the Korban Pesach is processed on the 14th of Nisan, as is, meaning even though Rove of the people are Tumei Meis, they will bring their Korban, and if one looks in the Rambam, he will see that he paskins they will eat the Korban as well. This halacha of majority Tomei, and hence we make an allowance for the Korban Pesach to be brought in that state, is a special feature associated with Tumas Meis and not other Tumas. For example, if Rove of Klal Yisrael are Tomei Zav, they experienced bodily Tumos as a result of different emissions. There are other kinds of body Tumas. We don't have to get involved with that now. The example the Gemara cites is simply Zav. If Rove of Klal Yisrael are Tumei Zav, they do not do the Korban Pesach. We just saw, before we go on in our note, we just saw a sugya concerning a mitzora becoming a Baal Keri. And we saw an allowance made for this, for the Baal Keri situation that ordinarily would not be allowed, but it rides along the mitzora situation. So let's continue in our note. Al smach hadin sheula, Rav Yosef roitze lahakish elav matzav shalruban zavim v'nasu tmei mesim, ulahatir lohem asiyas ha-pesach betumah. He wants to allow, the Gemara will question this, but he wants to allow a case of Rov Klal Yisrael having been tomei because of a bodily emission, who also became tmei mesim, and allow them to do the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan. Since the Torah makes an allowance for Tamei Mesim to bring the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan, we will make an allowance for these people who happen to be also Zavim. We must emphasize that we're talking about Zavim who are also Tamei Meis. Let's continue in the Gemara with Rav Yosef's halacha. Omer Rav Yosef. Kosovar Ula. Rashi interprets to mean that based on what Ula taught regarding Pesach, based on what Ula taught regarding the Baal Keri and his, Baal Keri Tvuyom, on his eighth day of Tzoras, the Taros HaTzoras, regarding the issue of a Pesach HaBo Betuma, which is what we described before, where Rov Klal Yisrael Tamei Meis, Rav Yosef wants to extrapolate from Ula's teaching, Ruban Zavim V'Nasu Tamei Meisim, where Rov of Klal Yisrael were Zavim. And we mentioned in our introduction that the concept of Dechias Tumah, of pushing off Tumah for the sake of the Korban Pesach, does not apply to the case of Zav. It applies only to the case of Tamei Meis. But in a case where they were originally Rov Zavim, and those people became Tamei Meisim, Hoyo v'hutra l'tumasan, since the Torah makes an allowance for Rov Klal Yisrael Tamei Meis to do the Korban Pesach on time, on the 14th of Nisan, hutru l'zivasan, we will make an allowance for their ziva. Omar le'Abaye, Abaye raises an objection, but at the same time, while he raises an objection, he also offers his own approach to what Rav Yosef was trying to accomplish. Omar le'Abaye, midomi, Abaye says to Rav Yosef, how can you compare your case to the case that Ula was talking about? Tuma ishtari, ziva lo ishtaroi. The tuma that we made allowance for, namely the tumas meis, that occurred afterwards. If you go back two lines, notice the order of things as Rav Yosef presented them. He started off with a case they were Rov Zav and became Tomei Meis. Well, in that case, the Ziva which came first remains in its position. The allowing factor, the lenient factor, if you will, the Tumas Meis, that set in only second. This is to be contrasted with the case that Ula suggested, where the allowing factor, namely the tsaras, that started first. He became a Balkeri on the eighth day of the Yemei Tahara of the Mitzora. So, in a situation like that, where you start off with an allowance, you sort of open the portholes of salvation through the tsaras, the fact that some problem comes up a little later, that doesn't pose a problem per se, because it's coming on the heels of an open door, of an allowance. That is different than the case that Rav Yosef presented. Rav Yosef presented a case where you're starting off with something for which there is no allowance. You're starting off with ziva. You can't expect a case like that to be compromised only by the fact that later on a situation of leniency arises. However, Abaye goes on, Dilma hochi komamar. Maybe what you are trying to say, that he's addressing Rav Yosef in an attempt to parallel the case of Tumas Meis Zavim to the case of Mitzor Balkeri, try this out and note the order. Ruban Tumei Mesim Vinasu Zavim. If you have a situation that Rove were Tumei Meis and they became Zavim, Hoyo V'Hutra L'Tumasan Hutru Lizivasan. Since an allowance is made for their initial problem, namely the Tumas Meis, we know there is a leniency, leniency afforded to Tumas Meis in the face of the Korban Pesach. Since that is what started the situation, the fact that they later became Zavim doesn't ruin the opening leniency. Maybe that's the situation that you, Rav Yosef, were trying to describe. Let's read that again. Dilma hachi komamar, ruban tamei meisim v'nasu Zavim, hoyel v'hutru l'tumasan, since they received an allowance for their Tumas Meis, which came first, hutru l'zivasan, the ziva that comes later doesn't pose a problem. And that would be parallel to the case of the mitzora that became a balkeri. Omar le'in, Rav Yosef says, you're right. That's the case that I was trying to describe. However, we're not finished. Omar le'i, Abaye, it would appear, says back, v'akati lo domi. But still, there is lack of parallel. Mitzora, the case that Ula was talking about, hetera hu. That is an outright allowance. The Torah ordains that. The Torah dictates that. Namely, that the Mitzora must stick his hands into the Azorah. Hoyo v'ishtari ishtari. Once you have an open allowance, we say that everything goes along with it. In this case, when we say everything, we're referring to the keri. This is different than our attitude toward Tuma. Tuma dechuya hi. The Tuma, which is the din that Rav Yosef was talking about, Tumas Meis, that is called dechuya. In other words, we make an allowance, but it's not an open allowance. It's a minimalistic type allowance, and that's captured by the word dechuya. Dechuya literally means pushed away. The word dechuya indicates something that with difficulty we made an allowance for. The word hutra or hetera indicates something that is allowed with ease. So the din of Rav Yosef, though, features tuma as opposed to tsaras. Tuma is a term referring here to tumas meis. The approach that we have to tuma is one of dechia. And as a result, we might end up saying, Laha idchoi, an allowance, a begrudging allowance is made for Tumas Meis. Laha lo idchoi, but for the ziva that Rav Yosef was describing in his Tamei Mason that became Zavim, but for the ziva, lo idchoi, there isn't even a begrudging allowance for that. Therefore, you can't learn the din of Ruban Tamei Mesiv and Asu Zavim from the din of Ula of the Mitzora She Ra Keri. Amale Rava. Rava addresses Abaye and says, Adarabba, Ipcha Mistabra. If anything, logic would say to the contrary. Mitzora Heterahu. Mitzora is a special allowance. Leha ishtaroi. Uleha lo ishtaroi. It could be that the special allowance is for Mitzora and Mitzora alone, and not for the Tvuyom of a Keri. Tuma, on the other hand, Dechuyahu. Tuma is something that doesn't have a specific, a specified allowance for. It's a general begrudging leniency that's afforded. And as such, we can say, Mali chad dechuyo, mali shtei dechios. What difference does it make if it's a dechia for the sake of Tumas Meis, or it's a dechia for Tumas Meis and Ziva? Michlal, we can infer from this discussion, the travayu, both Abaye and Rava, Svira Lahu, Tuma Dechuya Hi Betzibor, that the approach that we take to the issue of public Tuma is one of we make an allowance, but only begrudgingly. Rashi points out that the significance of this final observation would be appreciated in another sugya where you find a dea, an opinion that says tuma hutra betzibor, that when you're dealing with a majority of the public that are tame, an open allowance is made for it. Once again, the term hutra as opposed to dechuya. That being the case, now that we know that Abaye and Rava, two opinions, say tuma dechuya betzibor, they would represent a Rabim, a majority opinion, over the singular opinion that says Tuma Hutra Betzibor. It is true that in the context of our Shiur, we're not describing in detail the different halachic ramifications of Tuma Hutra versus Tuma Dechuya. Suffice it to say that they represent two different legal approaches to the issue, and the description of Tuma as being Dechuya Betzibor would be the opinion formed by Abaye and Rava, as opposed to a possible singular opinion that holds Tuma Hutra Betzibor. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.